Thank you very much, Peter, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. By and large, we regard ourselves as living in a free country. In many respects, this is true. We enjoy freedom of speech, freedom of civic association, and so on. As Australians, we take great pride in being free to speak our minds, to tell it as it is. We regard Australia as having a free press. In fact, some might say the media has too much freedom. But the freedom of our press reflects our own freedoms. It is something that we shouldn't take for granted. My simple warning to you is this: don't. Not because we face some far-off threat, because the threats to our freedom are already with us. They affect us every day. My comments on democratic freedom are through the prism of the media. It is through the media that most Australians are kept informed about the things that affect them, such as how we are governed, how our taxes are spent, how justice is done and seen to be done, and so on. Across Australia, there are now some 500 different secrecy provisions in various pieces of legislation that restrict what you and I are allowed to know. In the next few minutes, I want to talk about a number of areas in which our right to know has been severely restricted over the past couple of decades in a period of encroaching secrecy and censorship. First of all, I'd like to deal with freedom of information. We are told by our governments that the vast majority of requests for information are met. In Victoria, in fact, I'm told the figure is some 97%. Like the promise that your margarine is 97% fat-free, it's really the 3% that's important. The 97% refers to all those thousands of requests from private citizens for pretty basic information. The 3% refers to information about government policy and decisions that politicians don't want us to know about. Like the fact that a $6 million bonus was to be paid to the private operator of Victoria's speed cameras once a certain number of fines were paid by you, the motorists of this state. That information took a lot of effort to extract from the government. A lot of information is kept secret on some flimsy basis or another, such as which schools have the best or worst records of academic performance or violence, the bonuses that are paid to senior public servants, how much government money is paid to unions, the state's 20 most dangerous intersections, which pubs and clubs have the highest incidence of assault, which childcare centres have been served warning notices, details about contracts between governments and private third-party contractors, which restaurants have been prosecuted or warned for health breaches, waiting lists of hospitals, even the result of public opinion surveys on things such as workplace laws. It goes on and on. If the media can't get hold of this kind of information, chances are you can't know about it. The federal and state governments, and I mean every state government, are guilty, as are local councils and both sides of politics. Freedom of information is too often an oxymoron. We have a right to know how we are governed, how and why decisions are made, where our taxes are going. Here in Victoria, we were stopped from identifying a major public figure accused of fraudulent company dealings. Then the court imposed another order to prevent us from telling you we had been gagged. To get the information that really matters, you need to be very patient and have very deep pockets. We took one case involving the former treasurer Peter Costello, all the way to the High Court. It took several years, we lost, and it cost us over $500,000. In another case, we fought a long battle to get hold of an auditor's report on travel expenses by MPs before the request was finally granted. Then we were quoted $1 million in fees to compile that report. The information that's hardest to get is the stuff that's most likely to embarrass those in power. The situation is a national priority that warrants your concern and attention. In 1976, prior to the introduction of freedom of information laws, Prime Minister Fraser said, "If the Australian electorate is to make valid judgments on government policy, it should have the greatest access to information possible. How can any community progress without continuing an informed and intelligent debate? How can there be debate without information?" 32 years later, we're still waiting for that promise to become a reality. Now I would like to talk about privacy. The Australian Law Reform Commission has just released a submission, weighing in, I kid you not, at just under 5 kilos. It proposes a new statutory right of privacy that would allow innocent citizens to sue the media for breaches of privacy. So far, so good. We're all entitled to privacy about our personal lives, such as information about our health, the taxes we pay, and so on. If there is no legitimate public interest in a private individual affairs, then that information should remain private. But this new law would be irrelevant to innocent citizens to whom the media has no interest. Nor would it benefit those who have not needed the time nor the money or the perseverance to pursue litigation. It would be open to abuse by irresponsible claimants who could clog our already overburdened courts. Such a law would simply allow rich people to employ lawyers in a bid to avoid scrutiny for their wrongdoing. Such a law would protect people like Christopher Skase, Alan Bond, Rene Rifkin, Graham Richardson and others. The list goes on. Where is the public interest in that? The next area I want to look at is the suppression of information by courts. Using various statutes, judges can suppress certain information about a case if they believe that its disclosure could prejudice the rights of the plaintiff. Some of these restrictions are legitimate, such as an order that prevents the naming of sexual assault victims, children or juveniles, or an order that is genuinely deemed to protect us from a national threat to security or public safety. But many suppression orders are not legitimate, such as an order suppressing the name of a well-known director of a public company who put prostitution services on his corporate credit card. And an order which meant it was 2 years before the media could report that gangland killer Carl Williams was found guilty of murder. Or the suppression of a witness's name in a terrorism trial, though his identity and his evidence were already in the public domain. 10 years ago, there were about 100 suppression orders in place around Australia. Today there are more than 1,000. These orders often apply in one state but not in others. If you rely on the portal-less world of the internet for news, information suppressed in one state amounts to a blanket national gag in any case. Justice conducted behind closed doors is not justice. You only have to look at the case involving Mohammed Hanif to know that justice must not only be seen to be done, but must be done, but also seen to be done, I apologise. In his case, neither appears to have happened. The price for democracy can be very high. For individuals like Hanif, it is even higher. The integrity and independence of the courts can only be upheld when they are open to full scrutiny by us all. More and more whistleblowers are ending up in court. Whistleblowers are often public servants. They turn to the media, usually as a last resort, having exhausted internal channels that have been ignored their concerns about corruption, maladministration, or abuse of power within government or the bureaucracy. But when they blow the whistle, they are usually committing a crime under the Crimes Act. They are increasingly hunted down by federal or state-based integrity commissions and are charged. They can lose their life savings of superannuation defending themselves. They almost always lose their job and are silently ostracised and victimised in their workplace. Their career is effectively over. They face heavy penalties, if not jail. The threat of jail is real. And all of this happens regardless of whether they are acting in the public interest or whether or not their suspicions turn out to be right. Alan Kessie was a customs officer who denies leaking information about lax security at Australian airports, which made the country vulnerable to terrorism. His internal report was ignored for 2 years. After the Australian newspaper uncovered them, the federal government stepped in with $200 million to fix the security problems. Kessie was charged and, with leaking the information to the newspaper, convicted and sentenced to 9 months in jail, later suspended when he put up $1,000 as a good behaviour bond. He is now fighting an appeal with what's left of his life savings. Journalists can face the same problems as whistleblowers. Here in Victoria, a public servant, Desmond Kelly, was charged and convicted for leaking information to two journalists for a plan by the federal government to deny entitlements to war veterans. His conviction was later quashed on appeal. During the case, journalists Michael Harvey and Derek McManus from the Herald Sun refused to disclose their source. They were convicted of contempt of court. They were spared but jail, but were fined $7,000 each and now have criminal records. Their story was 100% right. This disclosure was in the public interest. In Western Australia, this year alone, 6 journalists have been hauled before the state's Crime and Corruption Commission and asked to reveal their sources. In Western Australia, you commit a crime if you tell anyone, including your spouse or your employer, that you have been interviewed by the Commission. In Queensland, the Parliament has just passed legislation that will compel journalists to disclose the sources or face jail if they refuse to do so. There is no legal basis on which journalists could refuse and avoid prosecution. I ask you, if you are a public servant, how likely you are to come forward, even if the information you have is right and the public has a right to know what it is. It is no coincidence that the more embarrassing information might be political, the hotter the pursuit by the police to track down and punish the whistleblower and the journalist who published their concerns. Instead of arresting, charging and convicting whistleblowers, we should be celebrating their courage. The public interest rests with the public, not the politicians and not the police. So the question for us tonight, democracy, do we have it? I believe we do. But like most things, it's imperfect. Like all things of great value, we need to cherish it, nurture it, and protect it. In a mature democracy, we should have a say in who governs us and a right to know how they govern us. We can only participate effectively in that democracy if we have the information that allows us to make informed choices. My proposition to you is that our democracy needs a lot of work on all fronts that I've covered this evening.